we passed a parliament, a budget. When we passed the budget, so the budget is tabled. The department has presented the strategic plans, but immediately after that, department starts shifting funds. It raises two questions for the committee. One question is, the committee is involved, or parliament, and this committee on behalf of parliament, is involved in the drawing of the, in passing of the budget. But when the departments try to shift funds around, the committee is no longer involved, or parliament is no longer involved. That's one. But the second thing is the second question that it raises is the credibility of these budgets. How credible are these budgets? If they are credible, why we accept that obviously as people implement, there might be a need to shift them around. But sometimes the way they are shifted, we begin to wonder whether there was proper planning of this budget or not. And as a committee, we appreciate the clauses, for instance, of the division of revenue. Division of revenue spells out very clearly how special implementing departments are feeling that all the departments that would like to have projects the following year, how should they prepare all for that for those projects? But at the end, when funds are shifted around, sometimes it's difficult for us to understand as a committee. But also, just I don't know whether it falls under budget or under public finance. We you work in national treasury. But Section 43, for instance, and that is what this workshop is about. I think that we really need your interpretation, and we had thought that the accountant general will be here because we informed him about this workshop. Maybe at the time we didn't have the date, but we informed him that we would want to have this. Section 43.1 says the accounting officer for a department may utilize a saving in the amount appropriated under a main division within a vote towards the deferment of excess expenditure under another main division within the same vote, unless the relevant treasury directs otherwise. In other words, it means that the accounting officer must seek permission from the relevant treasurer. Then, unless the treasurer, because it says, unless the relevant treasurer directs otherwise, another treasurer may refuse to allow that requirement. Two, the amount of a saving under a main division of a vote that may be utilized in terms of subsection 1 may not exceed 8% of the amount appropriated under that main division. Okay. Three, an accounting officer must, within 7 days, submit a report containing the prescribed particulars concerning the utilization of a saving in terms of subsection 1 to the executive authority responsible for the department and to the relevant treasurer. Four, I think that's where now really we really need to be clarified. This four says, this section does not authorize the utilization of a saving in A, an amount specifically and exclusively appropriated for a purpose mentioned under a main division within a vote. B. Let me repeat A. For A says this section does not authorize the utilization of a saving in A, an amount specifically and exclusively appropriated for a purpose mentioned under the main division within a book. B. I think B, an amount appropriated for transfer to another institution. C, an amount appropriated for capital expenditure in order to defray. Let me read it again fully. This section does not authorize utilization of a saving in C, an amount appropriated for capital expenditure in order to defray current expenditure. So that's where really the difficulty of the committee is section 43.4. The interpretation seems to be different. Okay, 5 says, a utilization of a saving in terms of subsection 1 is a direct charge against the relevant revenue. A utilization of a saving in terms of subsection 1 is a direct charge against the relevant revenue fund, provided that, in the case of a province, that province enacts such utilization as a direct charge. I don't know if I understand what I'm reading. 6. The national salary made by regulation of instruction in terms of section 76 regulates the application of this section. In other words, though the provincial salary has a right as well to authorize in case of a province, but national salary must still, in terms of section 76, also authorize. So that's really where that's the objective of this meeting. This section 74.4. When you ask the department say no. We have the authority of the national treasurer. Now we say, what is this 43.4 saying? That is the issue. Then further, is the issue then that generally of now the role of parliament vis-à-vis that of national treasurer. I don't know, before I ask national treasurer to comment, I don't know if honorable members would like to add anything. You fine. Yes. Honorable members, they say it's fine. But I don't want you to respond to what I'm saying, but I think your input will assist us. Comrade De Pierre, are you going to be leaving? Sorry, we're just sorting out something, but we're fine now. We can carry on. Sorry.
Good morning, Honourable Chairs. Excuse me. And Honourable Members. My name is Kay Brown, and I'm from the Budget Office in the National Treasury, and I'll take you through our understanding of Section 43, and the meeting invitation also asked us briefly to address rollovers. From a broad public finance management point of view, in terms of the principles and the concepts, and I have with me Gillian Wilson and Devon Naidu, both from the public finance teams in the National Treasury, They will also assist, particularly in respect of the practical implementation of the provisions of the legislation. Also with us is Nico Marie. I'm sure most of you know him from our Cape Town office. And then there are also... Okay. Right. In terms of... this is just to point out, basically, in terms of Section 32, I won't take you through all of it. But essentially, if you look down the bottom there, second from the end, we have the issue of environment as a component of the adjustments budget, and then lastly, rollovers as a component of the adjustments budget. In terms of environment, these are reductions under a particular department's budget, and I need to say that in practice it's in fact reductions and not necessarily savings in the pure economic sense of the word. In the economic sense of the word, a saving is incurred when you essentially are able to purchase what you were going to purchase at a lower cost and then you have some funds left over. However, in practice, where a particular program's expenditure is reduced, even if it's not for savings, it could be for reasons of reprioritization, or it could even be that a particular program for some other capacity constraint is now not able to incur the expenditure, and then the reductions in the expenditure in that particular program then are used to offset excess expenditure or spending more spending in another program. Within the following parameters, no more than 8% of the appropriated amount of a particular program may be shifted. In other words, that's in the from program, the program from which the money is being shifted. And the amounts appropriated for capital expenditure may not be used to supplement current expenditure, and amounts specifically and exclusively appropriated may not be shifted away, nor transfers to other institutions may not be shifted using environment. In terms, but these conditions are further elaborated on in the Treasury regulations, which we'll come to. From a public finance management point of view, I think one does want to have the function or the ability to via funds, because life doesn't unfold according to plan perfectly, and so it is a budget management tool, and there should be some flexibility to allow managers to manage, particularly if the PFMA, you know, is crafted on the principle that, you know, accounting officers must be accountable and must be able to manage. I think also probably to mention here is, you know, what one wants is you want the ability and the flexibility, but you also want to guard against willy-nilly environments or any ad hoc environments, and particularly perhaps where environments are used and a budget is not prepared properly in the first instance. Now, the environment process is governed in terms of that Section 30, which we saw earlier, and Section 43 of the PFMA, and Treasury Regulation 6.3, as well as Section 5 of the Appropriation Act. Just in terms of the internal process within the Treasury, where a department wants to buy a fund in excess of the 8%, then it requires approval of the National Treasury. It would submit such a request, and this request would then be sent to the Deputy Director General of Public Finance for approval for national departments. Obviously, this is if it is being approved or if it's being recommended for approval. The environment applications that are required for approval by Parliament, in other words, which National Treasury cannot approve, for example, in the instance of specifically and exclusively appropriated funds, the National Treasury cannot approve such environment. These vironments are included in the adjustments budget along with the vironments which the National Treasury would have approved, including also vironments which departments may have undertaken but have perhaps not been approved. And these then are detailed in the adjusted estimates of national expenditure and then obviously included in the adjustments appropriation bill. Okay, I'm not going to read.
I don't know if there is a clause, there's a section in the Act that would clarify that to members, you know, in terms of which are those vironments, other than 8%, other than those that are in Section 43. Because we would like to know those things. I don't think that now, today, we know that.
I think, Chair, I think you are indeed correct. In terms of the way the, and I'm just making a note now so we can go and make some changes. In terms of the way the vironments well, first of all, let me say in the adjustments estimates of national expenditure publication, the vironments table is always a difficult thing to read, and I'm sure the more long-standing members will know that. And we did make a change last year to try and make it, you know, sort of easier to follow which money goes from where to where exactly. But we do not dare distinguish between the vironments that are put there or that are reflected there that have been prior approved by the National Treasury, those that are in respect of specifically and exclusively appropriated funding, in other words, so that Parliament can clearly identify that, that in approving that, that would be their approval. And also there are included in there are vironments which departments may have been transgressing some of the rules, perhaps, and not have got Treasury approval. That might be reflected in there also. So, we can make some, we can certainly make an effort, I think, within that table just to highlight what has been approved by the Treasury and what is specifically and exclusively appropriated, which is purely for approval by Parliament. I'm not going to go through Section 43 because I think there's no need. Section 6.3 of the Treasury regulations adds to this. What it also includes essentially is that you cannot via funds for compensation of employees, except if you go to D there, you can see vironment of funds from compensation of employees to transfers and subsidies for payment for severance packages are allowed, okay? And I presume that would also be because there's no recurrent or ongoing effect, carry-through effect in terms of such spending. Transfers and subsidies, if you look at B, new transfers and subsidies may not be introduced except by the approval of the Treasury. And also in terms of transfers and subsidies for the purposes of paying, if you look at A, for paying levies and taxes imposed by legislation, may also take place. And then in terms of C, talking about allocations earmarked by a relevant treasury for a specific purpose may not be used for other purposes except with its approval. Okay, so that's the Treasury regulations. Section 5 of the Appropriation Bill says, notwithstanding Section 43, the National Treasury can approve the vironments in respect of appropriation for transfer to another organ of state, or transfer to another organ of state or to an organization outside of government. Obviously, this would be on a case-by-case basis, and it would be dependent on the merits of the particular case. And even in terms of capital payments, if that saving is going to be used for another category of expenditure, in other words, not for capital, Treasury may approve this, but again, it will depend on the merits of the case. National Treasury has also been considering ways of improving the departmental practices in respect of applying fireman's. So in the proposed PFMA amendments which were then withdrawn, we were looking in respect of vireman's at, for example, making the limit percentage apply also to the main division of the vote receiving the savings. So in other words, saying not just 8% of the program from which you're shifting the funds, but when the program that receives the funds, the amount that it receives should also not exceed 8%, because otherwise what you could have is that 8% is taken from a really, really large program, program in a department, and when that is added to a smaller program, it increases the amount of that program quite dramatically, you know.
Honored members, I know that we would want to give Ms. Brown opportunity to finish the presentation, but I think that it is very important, an important part of this workshop. That if people, not to engage, but just want to disrupt for a particular clarity, so that I think we can do that, you know.
And another thing that we were considering is perhaps changing the limit percentage from 8 to another number. The considerations, I think, that we would, I'm not so sure we were clear on what it was. We were still arguing. The idea was to make perhaps lower it, but we were also a little bit undecided. But what I would add here is that given that we now have, you know, the outcomes approach, you want to probably retain flexibility. And I think one, you know, really needs to consider about what is, the devil is in the detail, and where is the problem here? Is the problem in terms of compliance? Is the problem with the 8% and that the 8% is too generous? Is the problem with the Treasury approval, where lies the problem, or are there, you know, many problems? But the point is, I think a hasty decision on some of these matters could also lead to chaos. You certainly don't want a situation where you have no flexibility within a budget. Okay, I don't know if I should proceed with the rollovers. We were also asked to talk to rollovers. Rollovers, essentially, requests for rollovers must come from departments. Then a senior management committee within Treasury considers the requests and makes recommendations to the Minister of Finance. In doing so, we take into account Treasury Regulation 6.4, which says that in terms of capital assets, we can only roll over funds if that funding is committed. In terms of transfers, we can only transfer for the same purpose. In terms of current payments, no compensation of employees funding can be rolled over, and of the remaining current payments amount, only a maximum of 5% may be rolled over. And in the case of funding for a specific purpose, we cannot roll that over for more than 1 year unless the relevant Treasury specifically approves. In addition to what's in Treasury Regulation 6.4, we normally also apply the following. We look at rollovers will not be considered when there is going to be recurrent expenditure flowing from that particular, in other words, when there would be a commitment then in subsequent years. Where it's normal recurrent expenditure, and you know, like a telephone account or whatever, you know, that must just be done within the normal course of payments within a department. Anything that appears to be unforeseeable and unavoidable, because we deal with unforeseeable and unavoidable expenditure in a different process, and amounts that are of a small monetary value, which the department really can pay for within its current budget and doesn't need to roll funding forward from the previous year. This pretty much just says the opposite and says what we do consider favorably. We would consider favorably in when we want to spend, incur spend or roll over spending to finalize something that just was not able to be finalized in the previous year, obviously given that it was committed. And we also may consider favorably for rollover where a particular program was introduced for the first time, and so perhaps there were some hiccups in starting up. Essentially, I'm not going to...
Isn't that to a certain degree contradictory? Because you've just said that if, you know, the program is going to lead to a situation, if you roll over the funds and it's going to lead to a situation where there's going to be future expenditure on that program, then you're not going to give the money. But now you're saying you can do it.
My apologies. Let me be clear. You are perfectly correct. That did sound as if it was contradictory. In the case where it's a new policy, and there were hiccups in starting up, we would consider it, obviously, if there's already funding provided for the MTEC for that program, but basically they had some hiccups in the beginning and perhaps they would then, and we would also look at whether or not they would have the capacity to spend that money on top of the money that's already on budget. But the member is perfectly correct. We wouldn't support that if there was no follow-up funding already on budget. Okay, the minister then tables the approved rollovers included in the adjustments budget. We know that. We use Section 6 of the Appropriation Act, which says that the minister has the power to approve the types of expenditure in an adjustments budget before an adjustments budget is passed. But there's specific limits to the circumstances within which the minister may do this. The approved expenditure may not exceed the total amount set aside as the contingency reserve. This expenditure is a direct charge against the National Revenue Fund until we have the Adjustments Appropriation Bill enacted. The Minister uses this section for rollover of funds because it represents funding which has already been appropriated by Parliament, obviously for the previous financial year. The rollover funding is normally required reasonably soon by departments so that they can finalize the activities, and hence that's obviously meant to be the motivation for their request. The Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act, I'll go quite briefly through this. I'm sure members are conversant with the Act. Essentially, it provides the framework within the processes and procedures are to unfold in respect of amending, in this case, our interest is in money bills. It sets out the details. There are certain limitations, and once the fiscal framework has been determined, then the adjustments to the money bills take place within that framework. In terms of Section 1010, there's a list of items which the committee must indicate in respect of a proposed amendment. So in terms of a proposed amendment, it must say how the amendment takes into account the strategic priorities of the relevant department, what the impact of this is from a budgetary point of view, from a service delivery point of view, how this affects the balance of the different kinds of expenditure, and how this is all taken into account, all the information in respect of a particular department, which is listed right at the bottom there. In terms of the adjustment budget, the Money Bills Amendments Procedure and Related Matters Act is not specific about the procedures, but the same procedure is presumably implied as in respect of amendments to the main adjustments budget, which is what we just seen in 1010. So essentially then, provided that the items in 1010 are covered, then there will be a proposal to amend. The powers, however, are limited to the extent that the Minister of Finance would have used Section 6 of the Appropriation Act. Because remember, we said in terms of Section 6, once Minister uses Section 6, it's a direct charge. However, the Minister can't approve expenditure that is in excess of the contingency reserve, but it's also envisaged that the Minister would only use Section 6 where the delay would be prejudicial to service delivery in the public interest, such as in the case of rollovers and in certain instances of unforeseeable and unavoidable expenditure, like, for example, disaster spending, but not necessarily for all unforeseeable and unavoidable expenditure. The Minister of Finance, if there is a proposal to amend, the Minister of Finance is permitted an opportunity to comment, and in light of the new Act, I mean, I think in terms of the Treasury's thinking, we would like to cooperate and have discussions regarding some of the logistics around administering these reports in respect of amendments, I think particularly because there'll be lots of committee reports, and just collating and responding to all of that within a short time period is something I think we would want to talk about further. I also then have some of the rollover details of the rollovers that the Minister has approved. I'm happy to be guided as to whether we go through that or whether we just leave that with the committee members.
Chair, may I just ask, what is the difference between an amendment or any proposed amendment, you know, as to be dealt with by this committee, the Appropriations Committee, and a rollover or a amendment? Shouldn't they all come to this committee? That is my question, because it's not happening at the moment.
Can
I just wanted us to avoid the substantive questions, you know. Let's come back to that. Let's allow her to finish, because that's right. It's a question that, sorry?
Do you want me to proceed with the rollovers? I'd asked whether...
Well, okay.
Do you want me to proceed with the detail on the rollovers, or shall we leave that for further discussions?
No, just proceed quickly.
Okay. Perhaps the easiest way... Perhaps the easiest way, I think, to deal with it is perhaps if I just quickly go through them and perhaps particularly talk to instances in which the funding, the rollover was not approved, and then we can deal with, people can interject if they would like more detail on some of the other. In the case of...
Sorry, let's just do this now. And that's... maybe in the interest of time, you have the copy, no?
Yes, it is in the printed
copy.
Okay,
let us engage in this section. We'll have the copies. We'll have the copies of this, because you know the questions that Honourable Sass and other questions. I think they will be more of more interest to us.
Sure.
But let's just. We should have done before you come back. Can we do a quick introduction, starting with We're co-hosting this. We're all in Cape Town. That's for province, to indicate which province is here.
Okay, I'm Monet Rauda from the KwaZulu-Natal Treasury, the budget office.
From KwaZulu-Natal.
KwaZulu-Natal.
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning, Annalise speak from the Western Cape Treasury.
Morning, Baka Moya, Northern Cape Treasury, representing HOD.
Morning, honored members.
HOD? Yes. Oh, thank you very much.
He is attending an actual quarter today tomorrow.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Thank you, honored members. Thank you, honorable chairperson. My name is Errol Abrams, representing the head of departments of Northwest Treasury. And yes, come challenging commitments from the legislature that they had to attend to.
Okay. Thank you. Tusa.
Lovely. Tusa from Eastern Cape Treasury, responding, representing the HOD.
I'm Ruzane Rasibachere, representing Nomfundo Chawalala, Honorable from Gauteng Treasury.
Nomfundo Chawalala can be Honorable Chawalala. Nah, it's fine. Everyone is representing the HOT. But I don't want to go to PFMA about those delegated authorities. We will not go to that because you might find that no one qualifies, you know, to represent anyone here. However, thank you very much for coming.
Honorable members, is that the only clarity that you need for now? Honorable members? Honorable Snell?
I'm not sure how we're going to interact. I'm just ask questions. There was discussion about setting lower limits and using the 8%. But in some of the programs, and especially in police, if you look at the environment that they can make, there's bigger than some of the provincial departments' annual budget on that 8%. So is there no upper limit that's... And then secondly, when you're speaking about the various issues where environments can't be made, hypothetically speaking, if this committee had gone on an oversight tour and had seen areas where, in say for example, health and education, capital works had been stopped to utilize that money on current payments. How does that happen if you've got systems in place to make sure that it shouldn't take place?
Thank you, Chairperson.
I'm Kizzy. Ngiyakufuna baba. Don't run away. Ngiyakubona. Honorable, no, please continue. That's the manager there. I need to speak to him.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. I'm asking this question out of concern from experience before today. Can a department request for environment when the funds from whatever program have been exhausted? And the same thing with the rollovers. When that particular that particular program's funding is dry, then they ask for a rollover. Is that allowed? Do you allow it? And how long does it take for environment to be approved?
Honorable Ngo, I don't understand your question. You say the funds have dried up. Okay, can you? I don't know if I understood it. Well,
did you understand?
Okay,
thank you.
They understood the question. Any other questions from members? So from my side, is the you correctly
just spoke about the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act, which Chairperson, I think that NCOP must really look at it. I've got other worries about that in terms of, as it relates to provinces. It's something that we must talk about. But provinces are quiet. They don't want to speak for themselves. In relation to the money bills, I'm very worried. Sorry. Now, in relation to that, why the money bills Amendment Procedure Related Matters Act says is that the Parliament, I would assume, and the legislature, let's say, members now, in terms of that act, will be able to go to a department, if the Division of Revenue has been approved, the framework has been approved. But they can say to the department, this program A, we don't think that it is assisting our people. Move these funds to this program. More funds should be shifted to this program because we think that that's where the need is and those kind of things. And in relation to this rollover. Are there any contradictions there with that? But also, your remark that not in your words, that departments should be given room in terms of budgeting to play around. Now, the issue to us is credibility of those budgets, generally of budgeting. Why, as Parliament, why are the departments required to submit strategic plans? And we really have to engage in these strategic plans and approve them. In other words, department comes and says, this is our plan for this year, which is both presented annually and over 5 years, or MTF. But at the end of the day, after approving that plan for that, Division of Revenue, this side says, if department, the Division of Revenue, perhaps, maybe we should look at it because normally it talks mainly to those provincial departments, mainly, or local governments, because it talks about the national, about implementing authority or department and those that are transferring, but it says, the point that I want to come to is that it requires that people must plan in time. Now, come the beginning of the year, there's no spending quarter one. People are busy with tenders and tenders taken to court and what. Now, this, does it what we call a game? Is there proper planning? Is there a stringent way that could really be treasury in terms of the public finance management? Can really, I know treasuries are afraid. Let's be honest. Departments are not here. Treasuries, national treasury. We are afraid to say to departments, your planning is weak. That's why people have to, we approve budget is tabled in February. By the time we approve, budget is approved in the end of June, already you might find that funds have been shifted already. To us, the impression is that people really never actually intended to budget for that particular program, or they already knew that they would shift these funds elsewhere. Now, how do I know, as Parliament, that this was not the intention? In other words, the question that Honorable Swart raises is the role of Parliament in this. Is it for us to pass the budget and walk away and wait for departments to do whatever they like about the budget? That's a question.
Okay. I'm going to attempt just from my side to answer as many of the questions as I can, and then obviously some of them allude to the practical implementation, and some of them in terms of the practical implementation also at provincial level. So I presume after that the chair will allow then anyone to step in and supplement. In terms of the question regarding whether or not...
I think you're very right. Anyone, including the provinces, you're all welcome to workshop. Sure.
In terms of the question about whether or not these issues should come here, the answer is very definitely yes, and they do come here. The issue is just about when, I think. So, for example, the rollovers, Minister signed on Monday, and they are here. In terms of the biomass, they come currently with the adjustments budget.
I'm sorry, Kate. You know the other thing that we forgot? Is the frequency. The frequency of this. I mean, there are other departments. For the lack of a better word, I'll say that that's notorious. You know that Department A is going to apply for a rollover. I'm sure yourselves, you know about this. You wait for certain departments to come, and you'll be surprised if in a particular year they don't come. We know, sitting here, which department is going to apply for rollover. And if they don't, we'll definitely be surprised ourselves, because they are customers, in this rollover business.
Sorry, Jay, I see the rollovers are here, and the environment and the whole works, but they've already been approved by the minister, and I'm asking, in terms of the Moneyball's Act, shouldn't they come here before the time, before the minister approves them, so that we can actually look at them?
I'm not a legal expert, but my understanding of the Moneyball's Amendment Procedure and Related Matters Act is that it is a procedure to amend money bills. Yes, certainly, but...
What is the difference between an amendment and a rollover and alignment?
I agree. In terms of the Act, the powers to amend are quite clear. But my understanding of the Act is that the amendment occurs subsequent to the tabling of the proposal. But I'm not a legal expert, so, I'm happy to take that one back, and and let's engage with that. But that's my understanding. In other words, what I'm saying is, from a National Treasury point of view, I don't think that we certainly don't think that we are falling short of the Act. I mean, we'll find out again. Maybe we are, but that's not our impression and it's not our intention. Then in terms of setting lower limits and the question about, for example, a big budget like policing, yes, indeed, that is true, and the SAPS has a huge budget and it has some very big programs. And so, indeed, that is true. The nominal money amount of what can be shifted is rather large. And I think this just points to another element that we've been considering in the environment's proposals as well, is whether or not you put sort of an absolute monetary limit to the amount. In other words, it could be 8% but may not exceed X billion or whatever. But... one needs to have a more detailed consideration and some research around this, because you know, the counter argument is that a really big department should have, you know, more, you know, should also have quite a lot of flexibility. But yes, those are the kinds of things I think that we do need to consider more. In terms of the question about what about violence that actually can't be made and yet in practice we see they are, in terms of Clause 5 in the Appropriation Act and then also in terms of Treasury Regulation 6.3, the limitations of Section 43 are then qualified. And essentially, especially in terms of Clause 5 of the Appropriation Act, it then says that the relevant Treasury may approve. So in instances where one comes across this, one needs to ask whether or not this has been approved, because in some instances we know it may not have been approved by the relevant Treasury, but in other instances it may have. So that's how it can happen. In reality, it could happen that a department had, like health, perhaps had, and I'm not sure, I'm just using that as to carry on with the same example, but it may be that they have got Treasury approval for that. But it may also be that they had not asked for approval.
To me, there should be some kind of a system. I mean, National Treasury should have some kind of a system where they getting fed that information by the provincial department, so someone should know that if it has been approved by them. But then it comes back to the argument that Honourable Swartz is raising, Chairperson, to a certain extent. If no infrastructure is built for education in a province because of a Treasury deciding that that's not necessary, that flies in the face totally of separation of powers, and also flies in the face of why do departments then have to come to the legislature with an annual plan. It just makes it a mockery of the whole system. It makes it irrelevant, actually. So I'd like maybe some input from yourself around how you see that taking place.
Can you repeat the point that that's from the beginning where department applies to, I mean, where Treasury withdraws capital funds?
If a provincial treasury allows a department to move capital funds, surely they should be reporting upwards to National Treasury, and there should be someone who knows what's taking place, because in my opinion, National Treasury should be looking at the implementation of policy at a provincial level. But then secondly, if a Treasury can make a decision, a fundamental policy decision, a political decision, in fact, to say that they allow a provincial department, for example, not to build schools, and use that money to pay current expenditure. The legislature passed the budget based on X number of schools being built or renovated, a political decision. Now, you can't have a department taking political decisions for a legislature. No strategic plan would then come back to the legislature to ask for the legislature to politically amend that spending. So it ties into what we're saying about this committee approving rollovers as well, Chair, but just more broadly.
I just want us to be fair to Eastern Cape, to KZN.
That's why I said hypothetically, if this committee went out and saw that. I'm not saying we saw that, Chairperson.
No, I just want to be fair so that we don't too much generalize, Went to KZN, that's what the Honourable Member is referring to.
On a point of clarity, Chair.
Okay.
If you look at that one, for instance, on the screen there's a relevant for the presidential hotline, and these have been approved by the Minister of Finance. The question I'm asking is, in terms of the Money Bills Amendment Act, can we now change what the minister has already approved, or can we not?
Okay, now just trying to have the provinces clarify some of the things. Went to these provinces, went to KZN, went to Eastern Cape. Now, some departments say that no, we've got this letter that says we should stop the capital projects because there are no sufficient funds. But for KZN, because KZN came to us, Eastern Cape didn't come, decided to boycott us. KZN did come. They clarified the letter that there was some distortion in what the letter was saying to provinces. But to Eastern Cape, because nobody said that that was not the case, we took that, as the comrade is saying. So we took what to be what is being said about the project, that now we don't have money, can't continue with this project, and everything that stops there. But let us allow you to continue with the answers, you know.
Right. Should I just finish all my section? Okay. In terms of the question around whether or not, Treasury approvals may be making a mockery of the appropriated amounts, I think that is, essentially, I think it's very difficult to say. I mean, in certain instances, it is something that one might look at in terms of concern, but I think one needs to get to the bottom of this, one would actually need to do the research and see what the quantum of this is. Certainly in terms of Clause 5, which allows the Treasury, for example, to approve capital amounts for other purposes. The intention there was to allow, for example, there was a particular case where a transfer couldn't take place essentially because a particular museum or whatever it was didn't have the capacity. I can't remember specifically which one. But then not being able to via meant that one couldn't via to another museum or to another library or whatever it was. So the intention of having that there is to allow for more efficient and effective spending and to allow service delivery perhaps in another community if a particular community is not capable of producing that at that point. But I think in terms of whether or not it's a mockery, that one needs to look at the quantum of it and how it changes the service delivery plans from what they originally were. And certainly there, I think, maybe, if we need to follow up in terms of something specific or in terms of some general research, we can certainly talk about that. In terms of the question about whether or not the rollovers can be changed, in terms of us using Clause 6 of the Appropriations Act, it means that for the adjustment budget, for all the items, there may be amendments, but where we use Clause 6, the amendments would be limited in the sense that if it's a direct charge, then whatever funds will already have been expended at the point at which perhaps one would want to amend, that would be limited to the extent of the money that had not yet been spent. If we don't use Clause 6 and we do what we used to do before we had a Clause 6, which was essentially just to let departments know so that their planning could proceed as normal, but ask them to roll their current money forward from the months, the later months of the year, and continue on the outside chance, you know, perhaps that it would be disapproved, you know, but there's a problem with that as well. It doesn't give the department certainty, and some departments would then wait back until they actually did have the bill assented to in December. So, you know, we can certainly discuss this, but when we use Clause 6, it will be limited. But only in terms of rollovers and disasters, for example, we intend to use Clause 6 for also. But everything else in the adjustments budget can certainly be amended. In terms of the issue about whether or not funds have been exhausted and then what happens, in terms of the environment, if the funds are exhausted in a particular program, it means there are no funds available to be wired. So it's not possible for a environment to come from a program where there is no money. The idea is that it should come from a program where there is excess money in terms of the department's view on its current service delivery plans. In terms of the rollovers, this is a tricky one in the sense that rollovers, you're meant to roll over the funding that you didn't spend in 1 year and then request that funding gets rolled over. So essentially, the department must have had the funds unspent at the end of the previous financial year. However, if there are any deviations to any of this, we do report that to the Auditor General. In some instances, it may be that we roll over funding from a particular department to another department, depending. I mean, it would be a deviation, and we would have to motivate it. It's not a common practice at all, but it is a possibility. And then also to say, for example, in a particular program, it may be that a particular vote, it may be that one program is overspent. But on the other programs, there may have been underspending. And departments sometimes ask then for that funding to be rolled over. Again, you know, this is something which would have to be dealt with on a merits case. But it's certainly not something. It's certainly not the norm for departments to not have or to not use unspent funding as the basis for their rollovers. In terms of the questions that were posed, I think, mostly to the provinces about rollovers, and then if, and I may have misunderstood, but if my understanding of the question was about funds are rolled over to the new year, but then one may see that later on they've been wired somewhere else, and this is indicative of bad planning, or weak planning, or might even be mischievous budgeting in the sense that maybe it was done purposefully. And the question that was posed by the Honourable Chair was, you know, how would Parliament know that this was the intention at the outset? And I think for Treasuries, the question is also, how would the Treasuries know? In some cases, that is correct to say that we have known customers and we see them coming. But in other cases, we don't, and we do get hoodwinked as well. But in terms of the detail on that, I think perhaps this is where other people should come in terms of the practice and in respect of some of the other issues that were raised, which I can't answer from a practical point of view.
Comments my colleague made, and in the spirit of the workshop role that you mentioned earlier, I think the first to address is that if there's no petrol in the tank, the car doesn't flow. So at the coal face of public finance budgeting, if there's no source of funds through whatever savings might be yielded, then there's no application. So the budget directors must ensure that there's a set of valid reasons. The second is the estimates process of the budget is, by what it is, a set of estimates in budgeting. And under Section 32, you have the actual expenditure that is set out on a monthly basis. So ideally, money that is allocated under the budget system at the beginning of the year should be spent. But the system has to allow the flexibility for the rollovers and the firemans, as talked about earlier, where you have half a bridge built in a financial year and you need to ensure the completion going forward. Thank you.
I think what we also found in practice in terms of the practical implementation of the environments and all overs is that there is your smaller departments that's got budget pressures. And if they experience that there is an increase in the service during the year, it is basically impossible for them to pay that additional expenses. So they try and have savings on the one program and serve that money to another program. So that's important for them to also do to balance the budget. You also have departments like the presidency where certain announcements are made that need to be implemented during the year. That type of project wasn't anticipated when the planning was done in the beginning of the financial year. So in that instance, it's also important for them to generate savings on one program and shift it to another program to actually implement those new initiatives that was announced.
Thank you very much, Chair. Now, Chair, I've got a few comments to make. The first one is that while appreciating the principle behind Section 43, but I think we must agree that it has also put us into serious trouble, most with regard to financial management in respect of the three areas for me mainly. The issue of Section 40 cash flows, the issue of cash management framework, and the issue of the in-year expenditure management, because people would not do those things appropriately, knowing that there's a clause in the PFMA that will actually allow them to redo the mess that they have done. And then the issue around Section 43, Chair, just ask a question. How often must departments do these violations? If I say 8%, how often in the year? You know, if you take education, you know, as a case in point here, program two, 8% of program for education is actually a huge amount of money. That is one issue. Well, across the country. The other issue, Chair, are departments allowed post year end to also affect, you know, the environment? Because we have seen that departments in most cases, what they would do, they would actually underspend in some programs, but overspend in some programs. They will then play with the figures, you know, just to have a very nice picture, to say, no, we have actually spent accordingly, okay? Then the issue around the committee having to also take a bite on the rollover, I think for me something worth appreciating, perhaps not discussing further, and for one simple reason, you know, the applications that we get from departments, in most cases, truth being told, are no good at all. You know, the last issue that we must discuss, Chair, the shifting of the funds. you've got vehemence, you also have something called shifting of the funds within program. You know, overall, a program might look good, but certain key priority areas in that program, often they get compromised because the shifting also taking place within that program. And then my last issue, Chair, what is the best way of dealing with conditional grants when a department overall has actually overspent, but in terms of the line item called conditional grant, how best do you deal with that? Because in the face of it, you can say, no, education, we had 12 billion rand budget, but overall, aggregate, we have actually spent about 12.2 billion rand. But grant specifically, we see that we have actually underspent on the SNP and HIV and AIDS. Will you still allow departments to apply for rollovers in that case?
You forgot to ask the question about other departments that roll over without the approval of National Treasury. That do continuous rollovers. That rollovers money without the approval of National Treasury. You forgot to ask that question as well. For some provinces. Yes, sir. Can you repeat that?
Thanks, Chair. My name is Rodzani. The surname is Rasiba Chair. Yes, thanks. Well, what we do in housing, mainly when we looking at rollovers, where, say, for example, a department has underspent on grant, but the overall picture is overspending, we have put in place the separation of two sources of revenue, your conditional grants and equitable share, where we, from the cash management point of view, we manage the conditional grant separate from the equitable share, so that when departments spend, they know that they're spending. Yeah, yeah. So that if cash is getting into the account of the department, they know that this is equitable share and this is grant. So what happens is that the grant cash will be kept by Treasury and only be transferred when expenditure is ready. So Treasury will then safeguard the cash from a grant point of view. At the end of the financial year, there's going to be that cash which will balance back to the budget in terms of the grants. Then the process, National Treasury every year issues a practice note in terms of the treatment of unspent conditional grant fund, which will follow, surrendering back to the National Revenue Fund as a process for rollover. What we don't do as a provincial treasurer, say in Gauteng, we do not approve grant rollovers. We recommend the National Treasury, who has the authority to approve. What we deal with is in terms of the equitable share. The other thing, Chair, well, I'm not so sure whether we'll be able to have the balance, the time balance between the Public Finance Management Act and the Money Bills Amendment Procedure and Revenue Matters Act, where there is legislation available which gives Treasury the powers to approve the requirements and the like. And we have the money bills which is coming in now, which says the committee should still see those. Now, what we may need to discuss here, if I could ask to open it, is that departments plan and submit their plans to Treasury to legislature. There is a budget which is aligned to the plan, which is presented before the legislature in the form of an appropriation bill. And that bill is then approved or assented to by the legislature. Now, there is an issue which we may need to be cautioned of, is that when the Appropriation Act has been approved or the bill has been approved by the legislature, and you have requirements coming now for approval by the Treasury. The legislature says, for example, in Gauteng, education has a budget of about 24 billion. Program 2 of that department is sitting at a range of about 8 billion or so, and that is contained in the Appropriation Act. So members will be right to say, from where we're standing, we have approved 10 billion for Program 2 for education, which is sitting in the Appropriation Act, which they have. Now, come education goes and move 8% of that, which is in billions or so much money to take it somewhere, and it does not go through the face of the committee. That is one thing which we, I don't have an answer, but it is a reality, because it will come through to me. I will approve for my actual disapproval. That is what I will do where I'm sitting, because the Act says they have applied for violence, and the Act says unless with the approval of the relevant treasurer, it will come through to me, do my analysis process to really see if there is substance within that request. If where I'm standing there is substance, I will recommend for approval, and then it will be approved. Then it raises concerns whether my approval or my recommendation for approval satisfies the principles within which the legislatures adopted at the first when they were adopting the principles of the Appropriation Act. So there is not that balance now as we stand. Maybe we may need to move towards a point where we say, how then do we reconcile the authority as legislated of the Treasury and of the committee? We've got two acts here. I'm sitting with my own approval, because departments will say, Rosani, you have the approval according to the Act, and that is what I will exercise. But how then do I guard the interest of the legislature? So it will then prolong the process. So it depends on the processes within to approve the environment. That will be my comment for now, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and Honourable Members and colleagues. My first comment, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, is just on the question that was asked. When the funds have been exhausted, whether there's a rollover. From a provincial treasury perspective, the program that requests money must have the money, and the provincial treasury has a legislative right to say no and disallow that request, because who is going to fund, how is that request going to be funded? The second one, to add to what my colleagues have indicated, perhaps on conditional grants, where the funds are the budget, the entire baseline is overspent, but conditional grants have been appropriated in terms of Division of Revenue Act, and they have not been entirely spent. We then cut the budget, we reduce the budget of that department. It becomes a first charge to the appropriated budget of the UA. Given the fact that we owe the Division of Revenue Act and the National Revenue Fund those funds to be surrendered. So if that department is violated, DORA, we then as a provincial treasury reduce the budget as a first charge, and that gets reported to the provincial legislature. What perhaps I would also indicate is that, and perhaps request to ask my fellow colleagues from provincial treasuries, whether quarterly briefing sessions are taking place or not taking place with our legislators, because during that time we have the opportunity to even brief them on the rollovers that have been approved by the MEC for Finance. Prior to much earlier to the adjustments in November, because it is the PFMA in Section 31 that says the MEC for Finance shall approve the rollovers. Then in terms of that 31 subsection G, it says that during the adjustment appropriation estimate, we must then reflect the rollover that have already been approved. But I want to believe that we have the opportunity and the responsibility to our legislators to brief them on a quarterly basis, even when that chapter gets concluded and approved by the MEC of Finance in the province. There are, however, challenges with regards to the post-year adjustments. I want to say that perhaps today is the opportunity to look at that after an adjustment budget has been passed by legislature, the guideline that allows department to further adjust, that one becomes problematic for us as treasuries, particularly in the province, that at the time of preparing annual financial statements.
Sorry, Ms. Scott. This post-year adjustment, is it after
the adjustment
has been approved?
Yes, we have a provincial
act. We saw this for the first time in some provinces.
Yes, so there is a guideline that then allows departments to adjust further. But that one, the guideline says the provincial treasuries, you have no right to approve those ones. Only the legislature can approve. But then you find that opens up the system. that would then open up the system somehow to some manipulation, and that during the preparation of annual financial statement, the system further shifting, it would be much appreciated if at the time that the legislature passes that bill into a provincial adjustment act, that we stop there for accountability purposes and to actually understand what the challenge is, and so that as officials can then be guided in the right direction. Thank you, Honest.
Thank you very much, because I think that, Mr. Tusa, the first time we notice what Ms. Nkambe says is when we, with respect, went to the big province, you know, the Eastern Cape, and found that there was an adjustment. But after the adjustment, people continued to do, to shift funds again, and then, well, we didn't understand. Maybe what we need to do as well, we have you gave us this, some what you call the guidelines, you know, your assistance, but I think this one, we're a bit ignorant about it, and sometimes we may jump where we're not supposed to be jumping. But the issue that Ms. Nkambe raises is about the when the department has, I assume, has overspent, where you reduce the fund. In other words, do I understand you to mean that if they have overspent, they will get their budget less? This overspend, is that what you're saying?
That's what we're saying on FHA. In particular, the equitable share must refund because it's clear that if the conditional grant is underspent and suddenly there are no funds to surrender to National Treasury if there are no commitments, or apply for a rollover from National Treasury to rollover to that specific grant, then it means the equitable share finding all the conditional grant that money. That's the rationale behind the first charge and the reduction of the equitable share funding.
Thanks, Chair. Some of my points were already covered by the last two speakers, but I just wanted to highlight something, Chair. With our province, we normally would try to comply with the treasury regulations and PFMA in terms of rollover requests. All the rollover requests are environments, when the departments request environments. The only challenge that I have is now in terms of the treasury approval, that we are able to grant approval for environments and then the money goes amendment procedure. I was looking from a different context, Chair. When we look at Section 25 of your PFMA, when it speaks about the MEC of Finance using funds in emergency situations, and then it says, in some of that context, it says, after that has been done, a report must be tabled in the legislature within 14 days in terms of that specific process. Now, all I'm asking is that Maybe one needs perhaps to consider that when environments or something maybe be approved or requested, shouldn't that also be more frequently reported in terms of when the environment has been effected, so that when the APP has been tabled, the legislature have put the approval on there, so that whenever the frequent changes happens, that it can be frequently communicated and not rather wait at when the adjustment budget is tabled, when it goes to legislature, when the main budget and adjustment budget is tabled, but rather in a more frequent manner in which that shifts or environment be communicated to the legislature in terms of that. And then also the latter question that my colleague mentioned here was with regard to your environment, which the departments frequently request after the adjustment budget has been tabled. So the department's view is to say that the main budget has been tabled, so the main appropriation is tabled, hence they are able to shift 8% from there. When the adjustment budget is tabled, they see that as a new budget, and then they want to shift 8% of that budget, again, prior to financial year closure. And the departments request that even though National Treasury stick to the adjustment budget as tabled and not take the new shifts into consideration in terms of our IYM reporting. This is the comment in terms of that.
Thank you, Chair. In the Western Cape, I mean, we had about 3-4 years ago when we started doing analysis on vitamins, we found that the departments were trying to get to the bottom of why the vitamins were happening. And for us, we decided to be quite forceful in terms of setting the Treasury circulars regarding our understanding and our interpretation, first of all, of Section 43 and vitamins, therefore giving clear guidance to the departments of what they may and may not do. That's the first thing. The second thing, and I think that is also quite important, is in terms of everyone's interpretation of vitamins. And when I talk about interpretation, Chair, I'm talking about the practice about it, in terms of when we're implementing Section 43, are we implementing it all in the same way? And that's what we did across our departments to make sure that that happens. From there, we worked on in terms of if we want to influence vitamins, we went back and said the way you do that is to influence your planning processes of your budgets, and that's where we started. In terms of asking ourselves how robust is our analysis of the budget in terms of credibility and sustainability, besides the responsiveness, which obviously deals with the policy matters. So on the one side, a budget cannot be approved just on the responsiveness side in terms of policy, but equally on credibility and sustainability. So we left that part in terms of our budget analysis. And in terms of, we came up with indicators of how a budget will be credible and sustainable. One of the measures that we use is in terms of indicating the percentage change in the different programs. So, for example, I can give you stats in terms of our adjustments, what we changed for 2019 financial year. We changed from our main budget to our adjustments budget. Our total vitamins was 1% on average of our different departments. Within the different departments, it was an average of 1%. Then we also do further analysis of after the adjustments estimate, because as the previous speakers have indicated, that there's a practice note guidelines on vitamins that was issued by National Treasury in 2008 already, which clearly indicates that departments are allowed to do vitamins after the adjustments estimate. We do analysis of that as well, and for 9 and 10, we had 0.5% of change from adjustments estimate to doing vitamins in the annual financial statements. Now, that we take into consideration as indicators in terms of how credible your budget is. If you are doing more changes during the financial year with that concern, we would say that your previous budget you put on the table was not credible, so in the next year we would take that into consideration. So it's providing indicators for yourselves in terms of credibility of budget. Then furthermore, in terms of utilizing the processes, the first one was the planning and the stage of the budget. The second one is in terms of using the in-year monitoring. Now, if you utilize the in-year monitoring in terms of using it as a model to indicate you your current situation and the projections going forward of how you see your year, the rest of the year unfolding, we require the departments to indicate to us in terms of what vitamins they might be doing going forward. Now, that in your monitoring report, number one, for us quarterly, gets taken to our executive, which is the cabinet, and secondly, quarterly, it also gets taken to our budget committee, which is a committee within the legislature. And there we indicate in terms of to the legislature what the projections in terms of forward-looking the departments are indicating in terms of where they might be shifting funding or not. So we are giving early indicators in terms of to the legislature. That happens on a quarterly basis, besides providing to the legislature all the in-year monitoring reports that the accounting officers sign off on a monthly basis. So that is
given to the legislature as well. Then when we come in terms of the rollover, in terms of the rollover processes for us, we have also our own set of criteria, very similar to what the National Treasury indicated to you, in terms of the criteria set in terms of the PFMA as well as in the Treasury regulations, but we allow further subsequent our own criteria for rollover application. Similarly, for example, rollover, you cannot request a rollover if your rollover is not cash-based. So if you do not have the cash, you can't request for rollover. So there's still other measures in place. What we do, however, and what we found in terms of our analysis 5 years ago, was that departments can use your vitamin section after the adjustments estimate to put them in a position that is more favorable to request for rollover. For example, that in terms of an earmarked allocation, which is an allocation for a specific purpose, that automatically, in terms of, especially if it's a new policy, would not automatically, but would be considered more favorable to roll over in the next financial year. So what that actually means is that if departments have slow spending on other programs, they can vitamin to a program that they think would be considered favorable for rollover. So we have put measures in our system in terms of making sure that the adjustments estimate is the final cutoff, and we will test you against your adjustments estimate and not any other vitamins that you've done after the adjustments estimate process. So it does not give you, you cannot put yourself in an advantageous position so that when you're applying for rollover. So those are the kind of practical things that we can work into place. I think in terms of when it comes down to the legislatures, the important thing is in terms of transparency and making sure that the departments actually account to the legislatures for all their shifts. And our budget documentation and National Treasury always says the province of the Western Cape is cutting down a bit too much trees, but that is because we show each and every shift that an accounting officer has decided upon, and so that they can account for each and every shift. So first of all, in terms of the in-year monitoring, there is forward-looking, giving indicators of what is coming, and then in the adjustment estimate, each and every shift that has been done between programs and within a program that the departments can account. And after we've done that, it is actually seen as a deterrent. It's actually seen as a deterrent for departments, and therefore they are forced in the main budget, when they're planning the main budget, to plan properly. Otherwise, they will account for each and every shift and decision they've made. I think that's it from us from the Western Cape Chair.
Can I save my follow-up before, because I think to some extent the National Treasury must really wind up this debate. To me, it would appear that although National Treasury is tasked with implementing national policy, each of the legislatures have interpreted that policy in their own way, because each are doing a different thing. Now, how does National Treasury implement national policy? Because there's no norms and standards to this thing, what I can hear. And then secondly, Chair, if we look at, National Treasury sets the templates for annual performance plans to be submitted to the legislature by departments. The changes that are made due to vitamins, rollovers, etc., aren't then reflected back again in any way on those annual performance plans. They financial documents now that are linked to Treasury and the departments. But the annual reports that then come to the legislature, you're supposed to then assess the annual performance plan against the annual report. But if those documents isn't, if that APP isn't being updated with deliverables, how on earth do you assess that performance? That's why I speak, when I, mockery might be the wrong word, but there's there's gaps in the system. The AG is supposed to make a report on the implementation of things based on that APP. They can't audit performance if that document isn't continually updated. And I think when this Money Bills Amendment Act comes into place, it's even going to make us think more around that issue, because the APP will be given here, we'll debate it based on the figures, it's going to change that APP. It's going to have to get readopted from all, the possibility exists that it will have to be. So there needs to be a mechanism found there how to manage that process. And then with regard to the MTF figures that are given, No, that was a general follow-up from the input side. Like, but, and then, I mean, if you're speaking about multi-year projects, that bridge finishes in the middle of a year, then it's bad planning, you know, because that's why we're supposed to have an MTF. So this is how that process is managed. That's it. Yeah, thanks.
But there's a question that I want to come back later that you raised earlier in terms of political decisions. Because the MEC minister is not here, I want to come back to that question to act as a minister of finance. Okay, over to you.
It's a bit difficult as to figure out how actually to respond here. I think I'm going to just make some general comments, because to some extent some of the issues have been addressed, and it is an in by other speakers as well. Firstly, in respect of the violence, I would say that in the quarterly reporting on expenditure, what we should henceforth do is ask that at the national level, that the National Treasury then also provide information on any approvals of any violence they've made. I think this is probably a good first step in the sense that the assumptions and the rationale underpinning that can then be discussed, and where necessarily then National Treasury could also adapt the process that it uses in assessing these if it becomes evident from Parliament that would be required. So I would say that's probably a good first step. Then at least Parliament would continually be appraised of the Treasury approvals of violence, and at the time that the adjustment budget is tabled, it would then be clear that the rest are obviously the violence that have been done in terms of the legislation. So I think that's probably a good first step, and we can certainly action that should that be required. Then just to mention that the there was an extensive debate on the conditional grants and the surrendering of the funds. Conditional grants are specifically and exclusively appropriated. So essentially that those funds have to be returned. There's no option around that. Different provinces action that slightly differently, which I think is actually fine, as long as they still adhere to the National Treasury policy. I know that a comment that was raised earlier said, well, the practice might be different in respect of things, but I think that's fine as long as the policy and the principles are adhered to. In terms of the issue around the applications for rollovers and applications for violence, a comment was made about, well, do we allow them to apply? You know, we can never, as a Treasury, not allow a department to apply, but we can obviously exercise the right not to approve. And in actual fact, somebody said, you know, some of these applications are even rubbish and we know it. We ask at the national level sometimes, we ask a department to please remove their request because, you know, it quite clearly does not fit any of the requirements. So we do that as well, to bring home to the department that we do not want to entertain that. In respect of the APPs and the strategic plans, we're just about to issue the updated strategic plan and annual performance plans. and we will certainly come to brief the committee on that. The strategic plan and annual performance planning guidelines, they have been piloted and used in the provinces for the last year, but at national level they've just been using the previous guidelines. At a national level, no annual performance plans are required in terms of, I don't know if we've issued this yet. We're supposed to be issuing today. So in terms of the exist, I don't know which one's existing, but in terms of the new ones, let's put it that way, national departments will now also be doing annual performance plans. At the national sphere, in the adjustment budget, we actually require, there's a section there which requires departments to show when they've moved money around or when they've received money for rollovers, et cetera, as the money's been added to or subtracted from within a program. They need to indicate how that affects their performance. And there are quarterly reports which should be updating that. So that this can be audited properly. We're also in discussion with the Auditor General about how we implement all of this. And we certainly are very aware of the requirements of the Money Bills Amendments Act and are earnestly trying to bring all of that on board, as well as, particularly on the performance side, the requirements of performance monitoring and evaluation, and you know, in the way in which we do our business and the way in which we would want to present information, and the timing around which or around when information is provided. In terms of the I think it was important that the issue around the monthly drawings and the drawings projections was raised. I think that is a critical area, and I think in some instances it is something that certain departments, you know, may need to pay some further attention to. And if those, you know, if one works constantly towards more accuracy in terms of the initial planning and projections, I think then obviously the degree of violence would be less, but you know, one would never have a situation where you would not have any changes whatsoever. In terms of the issue that was raised about the building of a bridge that ends in the middle of a financial year, that's quite fine. We just hope that the drawings projections for that bridge end in the middle of the year as well. But maybe I misunderstood.
Yeah, I think the example was made by your colleague that a bridge finishes in the middle of a, at the end of a financial year, it's halfway finished. Our point was this, I mean, either then you're hiring consultants that don't know how long it takes to build a bridge, or you've budgeted badly for it. So the MTF would give you the ability to be able to have multi-year budgets, in our opinion. So then how is our department, the question that's often raised, are departments using the MTF budgeting process effectively to be able to plan to reduce the burden on yourself to pass rollovers, for example? Okay.
You know, just to add is that, I mean, we have not been convinced that departments really are taking the MTF process seriously. Because we can't every time we find that the departments have failed to do A, B, because to us is the issue really is start from MTF, your strike plans, which should give us people an idea of where they want to go. And not that there won't be problems if once there's proper planning, there won't be problems. During implementation, there will be a problem, but we're talking major problems that really indicate that we have a problem with our plan. That is where we are.
That may come back on that one then. Apologies. I think from the...
other issue that my colleague mentioned, Honorable Snell mentioned, which I think that is an issue that we should debate some other day. If these protections that are given by consultants, take your Gautrain. I was in Gautrain at the time the Gautrain was started, or at the legislature. We were told that it would cost 7 billion rand. And it was approved on the basis of costing 7 billion rand. The next day after approving it, it ballooned 20 billion, 25 billion, until Master Teller intervened and said, now, if you're going more than this, then we will not take it. The fiscal can't take that kind of decision. The debate that we really need to come back, that if these people, you employ consultants at high cost, they make these what they call a projection, but government is made to pay your arms deal, what you call a thing, say 30 billion. Then the next day is what you call 60 billion, twice what you call the price. But government must what you call it now, because it's the government that actually signs the agreement. Then it becomes responsible. So I'm saying some other day we must come back to this consultant that we use. And so I agree with the.
I think in terms of planning, I think the Treasury couldn't agree more that we might be policy rich, we might be many things, but the planning is definitely an area that needs to be bolstered. And in terms of the strat plans and now new annual performance plans for national departments, I think at least that also bolsters the planning at the national level, where the strategic plan, which is obviously the higher level strategic planning, but the operational planning in some departments is certainly there, in other departments is wanting. But at least with the annual performance plan requirement, I think one would be able to start getting a better handle on that. In terms of the MTEF, I think from a budget reform point of view for the National Treasury, we are looking at the bolstering of planning and the better use of the opportunity to forward plan in terms of the MTEF. Cost overruns are obviously always an issue and are always a risk. But certainly, what can government do to get a better handle on that? And there are various ways in which countries have dealt with some of these things internationally. In some countries, they introduced two-year budgeting, for example, to force departments to work on a longer-term horizon, and not have an annual budget where you can say you're working over 3 years, but every year you have a requirement, when you put your budget submission in, you have a requirement for year one. But given the current, fiscal environment and with the economic crisis and so on, I think most of those countries that did have two-year budgeting have reverted to annual budgeting at the moment. But so there are some things to consider, I think, in going forward. And certainly from a budgeting point of view, the introduction of performance monitoring and evaluation of the Planning Commission, of the Moneyball's Amendment Procedure Bill, Act, etc., does mean that we need to really rethink about the practice. I'm not so sure it will change, the PFMA per se necessarily, but the actual practice of budgeting and planning on the ground.
Out of interest, this might not be part of this, does National Treasury ever have a workshop with provincial treasuries so that everybody is on the same level of understanding and agreement?
You've come there. There are two issues that apply. One, the department overstands But sometimes when the department is understanding, we have an annual budgeting system. Now the budget, the department is, they can see that they are going to understand. They have a tendency to want to confuse the legislature and say, no, this project is a big project. They say it's a big project over 3 years or 2 years, and therefore we can't we can spend this money the following year. And now, to ask them the question is, why do we budget annually then if you're going to do that? Because understanding is that you should be able to project it. This year you want to spend this much, next year you want to spend the other amount. So I'm saying they also do it deliberately when they try to run away from the fact that they know that they're going to understand. But you may respond to the comment.
Certainly. Yes, the National Treasury does have interaction with the provincial treasuries, as the Minister of Finance also has interactions with the MECs of Finance. The committee or the forum on which the provincial treasuries and the national treasuries have their workshops, that forum is called the Technical Committee on Finance. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that the Honourable Chair may even have attended the odd one or two of them. And then with regard to departments knowing full well that they can't spend funding in a particular year but requesting it nonetheless, I think that links up with a comment that was made earlier about, you know, some potential gaming in terms of rolling money over and then via making it a environment in another year. Also, sometimes I think what the departments think is, well, you know, in this fiscal environment, you know, I think I'll get the money maybe next year if I put it in for next year, and, you know, there's a projection that it will be fiscally tight, or I'm up against other potential requests for funding, then I don't want to postpone taking my chances. I would like, you know, to kind of get my foot in the door, if I could put it that way. But we do try to guard against that. Even when it comes to something like disaster funding, which almost in a way perhaps people would think you should just close your eyes and sign Treasury and not use your normal mantra of no, no, no. But even for disaster funding, when a disaster occurs and we get a request for funding, we are asking departments to indicate to us when the funds will be expended. So yes, you know, a bridge may have washed away, but you're not going to construct that bridge in the next 3 months before the end of the financial year. However, you know, you may need to incur other kinds of expenditure within that particular disaster area. So that is something that the treasuries are looking out for.
Thank you, sir. I suspect that with this Section 43, I'm not sure if it's exhausted. I suspect it's exhausted because Treasury says we also passed the appropriation bill with Section 5 saying that the National Treasury may override the Section 5 of appropriation, notwithstanding Section 43(4) B and C of the Public Finance Management Act. National Treasury may approve utilization of a saving in an amount appropriated for transfer to another organ of state or to an organization or a body outside of government, or an amount appropriated for payment for capital assets if the saving is to be utilized for other categories of expenditure. I know that at the beginning of the year, we wanted to challenge this. I think that somehow, but it's something maybe we really need to engage further in this section 5 of the appropriation, you know. I suppose that is going to be there every year, in order for National Salary to cover its debt. But it really makes oversight. If I suspect that I'm speaking on behalf of the committee, a bit difficult, because the understanding is that these five funds are kind of ring fence, a kind of conditioner. But now appropriation says, no, it's fine. National Treasury anyway can still override that and approve. In terms of the question, I want him to come back to the question that was raised earlier, that perhaps some of the decisions that provincial treasuries take, maybe, I'm not sure if I'll put it in the right way, political, but I think there was something like that. But, well, I do suspect that the Constitution, that's why I said I want to play a devil's advocate and be Minister of Finance and waive both separation of powers. Or any executive. The Constitution gives the National Treasurer a responsibility. Section 2161 says it's about Treasury control. 2161 says national legislation must establish a National Treasury and prescribe measures to ensure both transparency and expenditure control in each sphere of government by introducing a generally recognized accounting practice, B, uniform expenditure classification, and C, uniform treasury norms and standards. And I think that the PFMA then says Treasury may do this, these are the responsibilities of Treasury. I do suspect that perhaps Treasury may be using some of his power to do that. But the issue that really concerned us, Mr. Tucson, and I think that, I'm not sure if, I didn't think that this question was properly understood. Yes. And Ms. Brown, I don't think that I would want to agree with you that if the bridge was planned to stop halfway. But the issue is that for us, maybe it has to do with this understanding of this clause that those funds that has been ring-fenced and identified to do capital expenditure must be allowed to do so. But the issue that really the colleague is trying to raise is that once the budget has been passed, whether, say, it's equitable share, for instance, or conditional grants, and say, this money will do this. Now, I think the question that is being raised is to say, has the treasurer, any treasurer, a right to say in the middle of the implementation of the budget, says, no, with this one, we can't continue now, because we have shifted funds from this to elsewhere in the middle of the budget. Am I interpreting correctly? Correct? Yeah, in the middle of the of the financial year. That is the question that we think that there's a problem with that, because the legislature whether it's national or provincial, has approved a budget to do certain things for that particular year. So now the question is that if then there should be that, you did raise, I think at the beginning, that there are instances where national federal may say it's beyond us. Parliament must what we call it, approve it. And I think that I must concede, it's the first time one of us, I understand. Before today, I never understood that part, that there were areas where national government couldn't approve. And I think that's why then we're having this contest of what is our role, what is the role of national treasury. With that now, but we want to have those guidelines ourselves, you know, so that we can be able to do a proper, if not effective, oversight, because we care about the rules. We're not going to be able to do oversight if then the department says, no, committee, you're not aware of this guideline. It disempowers a member. I don't know if you want to comment, but okay.
I think from, you know, you asked whether or not National Treasury has the right, just to take it from a legal perspective, because I did get a legal opinion on this, that in terms of Section 5, because it says notwithstanding the PFMA, it actually, you know, from a legislative point of view, trumps. So in terms of this clause, National Treasury does have the right. However, if this clause were not there, National Treasury would not have the right. The clause, as we find ourselves now, I think, you know, the clause is there in the current appropriation bill. I would suggest that as a way forward, in order to provide for the transparency and the accountability that would be that is required of the Treasury, that we provide you when we come with the quarterly reporting on the expenditure, with a report on which environments we've approved and what the circumstances were around that, and that within those interactions, we then obviously would get some sense of meeting each other with regard to this. I think it would even be, you know, if more regular feedback would be required, I mean, I think that can also be organized. But yeah, essentially, the thing with vironments is vironment requests and approvals can happen at any time. So, you know, unlike something like rollovers or unforeseen and unavoidable, there's a certain date by which a department must apply, and then then that's that. In the case of vironments, as long as you're within the prescripts of Section 43, they happen every month in a way. But I think the best proposal would be that we report on that when we report on expenditure, and that we then discuss with each other and see if we need to amend our practice in terms of approvals, which maybe we do.
Chairperson, I'd like to comment from the K-to-N perspective. Just in terms of the issue that was raised, that we reduce the capital expenditure of departments. Now, in K-to-N, we implemented the austerity measures, which was a cabinet decision. Now, the purpose of that was to get the departments to save where they can save, you know, on all those nice there stuff, especially on the goods and services. Now, in instances where they indicated that projects have not started, that indicated Treasury that they want to save on those projects. So it was actually an undertaking by departments that they want to stop those projects. And that indicated Treasury had to approve those projects. This cabinet decision enables the provincial treasury to move within a positive bank balance again, because over the last 2 to 3 years we've been exceeding our budget, our year-end budget. And the only approval we actually gave was at the Department of Transport. So that actually surprised me that the Department of Health had stopped capital projects.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. One question which was asked, and I haven't gotten the sense of any answer close to, was whether is there proper planning within department, and you asked the view of Treasury. Well, it remains a difficult one, but one would say the answer is yes and no in terms of proper planning within departments. There are those departments where you could really see that here planning is just for compliance purposes, complying to the budget process and those requirements. Hence, you will see lots of vironments come when the budget is loaded on the system 2 weeks down the line, there are vironments. That remains a question. But ideally, if there was credible and a proper planning with the department, we should not have been talking about those requirements or adjustments. We should have been talking about maybe the process where we will accommodate exogenous issues, which are not necessarily from within. But if the requirements are informed by the fact that this was misplaced in this item, it must go to that item. Those are the questions which genuinely are valid. In terms of the environment, I think the committee should also note that the Act also authorized the accounting office of a department to shift funds within, however, but should inform Treasury within 7 days. That is also another legality which is in place, where the head of department can, according to law. Now, how does that get accommodated from your viewpoint if the accounting officers have got those powers? The issue on the term which was used was post-adjustment environment or whatever. It might also be within that principle where accounting officers are saying, no, the Act allows me to do these things. Come at the end of the year where one will see that I have overspent here by 100K, and I have underspent on this item by 200. The department might want to put in simple terms to balance the books, to make sure that the books reflect at least a cleaner picture. But as Treasury, we are always on guard to make sure that that should be done within the principles of making sure that there is proper financial management, rather than to cover up for something which possibly didn't go right properly through the normal implementation of the budget. In Gauteng, we do have what we call year-end requirements to make sure that before departments prepare their annual financial statements, they balance the books. But we guard to make sure that we are not covering up for a wrongdoing or something which is not right. There are also instances where there could be, or we could authorize a movement from CAPEX to deferred current. Say, for example, you plan to implement project A at a cost of 100 million. You have planned it for a particular financial year. Everything goes very well. You have, say for example, in inflation which shot down and departments were able to buy for less. That which they have planned to buy by 10 rand, they have bought that by 8 rand. It means that there's going to be that saving of a 2 rand, and it is sitting on CAPEX. But to say when the project has been certified completely, spent, signed off, clear, the delivery has happened, and there is a 2 rand, it is sitting on CAPEX, what do we do? There is pressure somewhere which are necessary where we can offset that amount. But it depends on merit and demerit. But of interest from Gauteng's point of view is to guard the key principles of proper planning,
where we are saying for infrastructure, you must make sure that you use the system in place, the infrastructure development improvement program, which makes sure that departments should plan, taking all factors into account, where this kind of things should not happen. Thank you.
I want to say, as a committee, we agree with the Public Finance Management Act. We agree 100% with that. But all that we are saying as a committee is that people must budgets must be credible. If budgets are credible, you can't now, if you go to the airport and say, you ask a taxi to take you to the airport, they say it will cost you 20 rand to go to the airport. Then on the way, because this is when you take out the 20 rand, you take 100 rand, it changes your mind and say, no, it's no longer 20 rand now, it's 50 rand because you took out the 100 rand. To say that will not should not be acceptable. So if people are budgeting, it must be credible. No? But no, we really are aware that when you implement, there will be can be what we call a perfect. In fact, the issue that we're saying about consultants, that if those overruns are allowed, there must be a percentage, say by 5%. But it's not 5%. You find that it's more than 100% in some instances. You know? Then we must say, and there's nothing that happens to the consultant or what. But so as far as the budget is concerned, we agree with you. But we think that when we finally amend FMA 1D, I'm not sure when Nasser has been wanting to amend, but it doesn't. You know, we must define the saving. I think there must be a definition of saving. I was just thinking through, looking for this definition of saving. The understanding is called a saving. The saving that you were talking about, and also that was described earlier by Ms. Brown, is also called a saving. So everything, when people don't spend, they have not spent something that they plan to spend, they still call it a saving. And clearly, I don't think that anyone agrees with that. That's why we agree with your definition and her definition, that you must have what we call it, implemented it and made savings on that. Then that is it is a saving that should be acceptable to us. But also, now we want to move towards winding up. You don't want us to.
No, I propose closure, Chair. Actually, but I think there's clarity that's needed for KZN. It wasn't that we're saying that health projects had been stopped in KZN. There were two memos that came. The first memo stopped everything, air travel, hotel, distance the person should, equipment, furniture. The second memo, that first memo said any building that hadn't gone out to tender yet mustn't. The second one came to say that all other things had been held in place except buildings could go out for tender. There was also a freeze on personnel, which I said the cabinet could approve. But then there was another piece of that memo that said that if there's no budget for personnel, for equipment, for furniture, no budgets could be there. Now, if you're planning for a hospital, it's a multi-year project. You can procure furniture and you can procure equipment in a year. But now you're going to build a hospital for over a 3-year period. but you're not going to have equipment for that hospital or furniture. So effectively that thing is not being clear. It can be ambiguous, and it can be read ambiguously by people. If someone wants to sabotage government programs, they say, well, sorry, we can't put this hospital out because we haven't got budget for furniture and equipment. Another person can do it and then get you into trouble for building a white elephant. So that there was just in that memo, we thought there needed to be clarity. That's all, man. That's just a comment. Thank you.
Chair, I also call for closure, but just on the tell, you know, we visited the King George Hotel, and that was funded through EPWP funds. Hospital, yeah. Oh, did I not? Okay, no, hospital. Sorry. And you know, I take it that the province is not spending any money on that anymore, because you've expended more than half of the total cost of that project, and because you're getting it from EPWP funds, you are getting back more, in fact, than what you what you should be spending. So I just want to make sure that you do not take some provincial side, you're not paying towards that hospital anymore.
It's totally new item.
I don't want it to answer,
because yeah.
I will
find out. The provision must take home. Okay. I think it's something to discuss, because how to encourage creation of jobs there, if we say they mustn't do that. I don't know, before we wind up on this matter, you see, I agree with you around the the rollovers, that maybe we should postpone them for today until that day. Yes, but maybe also to say how often should we be getting reports of rollovers? Because they happen every month. Né?
Sorry, Chair, it's the violence, not the rollovers that happen.
Oh, the
violence.
Well, I think that is something maybe that all of us should just apply a little bit of our minds before we come to a decision as to when do we want to get reports. Just try to balance the operations and the and policy. Try to balance that, and then we find a solution on how to deal with it. But I don't know, before we close, if you want to comment on what was said or was the comment. Okay. Yeah. Now, the other thing maybe that we didn't deal with, somehow we overlooked, is the issue of... I think it's in the federal regulations, I think it's in the federal regulations. Because while it's about rollovers, that while rollovers are allowed, but I understand that it should be, I'm not sure what regulation is that, should be once, no? The second one must be applied for. But we have a customer here that really rolls over. You know, on one project, you know, if you take, for instance, I don't want to deal with them now, but let's just generalize it, that We know of a department that has a lot of capital, what you call the expenditure, but it rolls over about three times the same project, you know. Once we talk about the planning that we're talking about, so clearly it leaves much to be desired.
They are coming there just with a technical point, just for clarification for the committee. When we say the funds may be rolled over, we're talking about the funds appropriated in a particular year, those funds themselves within a particular program may be rolled over once to the next financial year. If you want to roll those funds specifically to the next year, that requires Treasury approval. If that particular program has a budget across the MTEF, that provision doesn't stop them from in the next year's, for the next year's appropriated funds, if they've underspent, asking for a rollover to the, you know, because then it's just rolled over once from the previous, you know. So it's a different appropriation which is being rolled over, just for clarification. But you're right, where there's perennial planning problems, there is a question there about whether or not the baseline should just be rectified once and for all in terms of the department's capacity.
On that note, we hope that the exercise was useful. My colleague, the Honorable Snell, raised the issue of perhaps National Treasury having a meetings, and you said you have meetings, and but in terms of the constitution, and I think that is in the PFMA, that these norms and standards, so that it becomes easy to do oversight. If we go to Eastern Cape, we must not find a difference when we come to Western Cape. We must still understand that we're still in South Africa, and therefore we can be able to read the budget everywhere. I mean, we're listening to what is happening, and I hope that members normally say that for this committee, we don't like just talk shops, you know. We want people from each engagement to have benefited something. So, and we hope that from this engagement, we have really benefited from this. And for us, I have learned something personally. I learned something, and that we have at least opened our eyes to this other angle. We'll run with it as a committee, ensuring that there is accountability on that. But I think that that's the other thing which was not necessarily meant for this meeting. But maybe we should try to call it first. We'll come back to National Prison. But on that note, would like to thank you very much for coming. And you can tell the HODs that all the apologies have been accepted, and all of them conspired to apologize. It doesn't matter. We have just accepted the apologies. Thank you very much. I'll stop your flight. Mantis, from to hand the air menu. La meeting my mandi on our bamba and plan. So, Zing and cocaine. What time is your flight? Yeah.
Thank you.